Okay, so just, we really don't need an introduction, but I need to give an introduction. It's unbelievable, of course, to have Rabbi Feigenbaum give a share. And, you know, from someone who grew up in our community to someone who became a leader in our community and then went out of town as a leader in Memphis and a rabbi and to Magid Shir, and I get to listen to his shears online. It's a real big schluss, and Bekava Gadol, Rabbi Feigenbaum.
Thank you very much, Henry. Thank you very much. You know, I was just thinking about it right now. It's a little bit strange. I don't believe I've ever spoken from this particular spot before. I've spoken from up here a number of times. That I know for sure. But I don't believe I ever stood in this spot before. It's strange because, like Henry said, I grew up here, and I remember Rabbi Sachs standing here and Rabbi Sobolevsky standing here, but I don't believe I ever stood in this spot before. Okay. But I want to thank Henry for inviting me to say these shiurim. You know, I'm sure that I'm not the only one who listens to Rabbi Usher Weiss, you know, on the recordings on the bcbm.org. And so I always enjoy it when Rabbi Usher says, "It's a pleasure to welcome to the shiur my good friend, Henry Orlinsky." And so so it's nice for me to welcome, you know, Henry after inviting me to come say the shiur. And Henry was right that I didn't have anything better to do on my vacation time than to come prepare another shiur that I could say with you guys here tonight, and so I have plenty of time, and so it's nice to come learn. So this shiur we're going to talk this week and also next week, same bat time, same bat channel, Wednesday night, right Henry? Wednesday night, right after Mar, right over here, this week and next week. We're going to look at two sugyas in Choshen Mishpat. Now, Choshen Mishpat is a really fascinating and I think underlearned section of Torah. Choshen Mishpat is really monetary law. So in Choshen Mishpat, you find torts. In Choshen Mishpat, you find contracts. You find mergers and acquisitions. You find messengers. And you know, they tell a story about Rav Chaim. I think it's about Rav Chaim. Story's not really my thing. But I think they tell a story about Rav Chaim that there was once a shochet. You know, a butcher. And he did a shechita and butcher, and that was his business. And one day he decided he had enough. And so he went to Rav Chaim, and he said to him, "You know, listen, I think I'm going to stop this this shechita thing." Rav Chaim said, "Well, what are you going to do? And he said, "Well, I'm going to go into business." And Rav Chaim said to him, I don't understand. How many years did you study shechita before you became a shochet?" And the guy told him how long he studied shechita and how long he learned. And then Rav Chaim said, "And how many years have you studied Choshen Mishpat that you're going to go into business?" And the guy said, I didn't learn any Choshen Mishpat. But it's interesting, if you think about it, you know, we have a lot of restaurants here in town. We. Y'all have a lot of restaurants here in town, right? It's very lovely. It's one of the reasons why I love coming back. No, it's because I get to stay with my parents and my in-laws. Oh, of course, right? But you know, we wouldn't have a restaurant without a mashgiach. You go into a establishment, you always want to know if it's kosher, and we do a lot of business. And I'm not so sure how much Choshen Mishpat we practice and how much we study. So Choshen Mishpat is a really fascinating and I think sometimes underlearned section of Torah. I'm going to show you today a really fascinating sugya about pricing. This week we're gonna talk about the ethics of a sale, giving the best price from the perspective of the vendor. And next week we're going to talk about getting the best price and shopping around from the perspective of the buyer. So two sides of the same coin that we're going to talk about all halachas in Choshen Mishpat. So let's start in the beginning. Everybody ready? It all starts with a Mishnah. It's always good when you have a Mishnah. A Mishnah is a really solid source. It's always good when you have a Mishnah. So the Mishnah says as follows. You find this Mishnah above Mitzian Daf Samach Amad Aleph. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Lo yachlok hachen bani kloyos ve'agozin letinokos. Everybody sees where I am, right, in the beginning, right? That a vendor is not allowed to give out candy to kids. That's not an exact translation, but that's what it says, right? That a vendor is not allowed to give out candy to kids. It's always nice when you walk into like a shop and if you have little kids like I do, or if you know what I'm talking about. So it's always nice when you walk into the shop and people are nice to the kids. You know, it can make or break an experience in a store, the way that that your kids are looked at. And so Rabbi Yehuda says that a vendor is not allowed to hand out candy to kids in the store when kids come into the store. How come? So Rabbi Yehuda says, because then everybody's going to go to that guy's shop. He's like stealing all the business. He's handing out. He's not selling candy. He's selling hardware, whatever he's selling. That didn't make a difference. Right? He's selling whatever he's selling. You're not allowed to give out candy because he's going to steal all of the business. And the Chachamim argue. The Chachamim say, no, it's all right. The guy can give out candy. If he wants to give out candy, that's okay. Good. And the second case in the Mishnah, and this one is the one that's more important for us, but I didn't want to cut out the first one because it's really interesting too. The second one, Rabbi Yehuda says, Lo yifchos es hashar. This is what we really want to talk about tonight. You're not allowed to undercut the market. If goods sell for a certain price in a certain market, Rabbi Yehuda says you are not allowed to come into that market and sell those goods at a cheaper price. So let's take an example. Let's say somebody sells plumbing supplies. I don't know, you know somebody who sells plumbing supplies? Anybody, you know somebody like that? Okay, good. Garden hoses. Say somebody sells garden. You know somebody who sells garden hoses? Okay. Tuna fish, what do you want? It doesn't matter. You pick the product, right? So somebody sells plumbing supplies. And so let's say a toilet costs, I have no idea, what does a toilet cost, by the way? Thank God, I have not had to purchase a toilet in a very long time, right? What does a toilet cost? Anybody really know, by the way? Let's say a toilet costs $100. I have no idea. I totally made that up. I don't have a clue. There's different kinds of toilets, I'm sure. So let's say a toilet costs $100. I don't have a clue. What? A toilet for $100 won't work. Good. So let's say a toilet costs $400, whatever it is. Right? So you have a $400 toilet, very, very nice. Right? So if everybody sells toilets for $400, right, Rabbi Yehuda says, I am not allowed to come into town and start selling the same toilet for $200. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to undercut the market. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. The Chachamim Romim, the Chachamim are you, the Chachamim Omrim, Zachor Latov. And the Chachamim say, no, not only is it allowed, but Zachor Latov. It's meritorious. You get a good reputation. Zachor Latov. It's good. If you come into town and you undercut the market. That's the Mishnah. Two interesting cases in the Mishnah. Two arguments between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda says that you're not allowed to hand out candies to kids and you're not allowed to undercut the market. And the Chachamim say, no, you're allowed to do both. You're allowed to hand out candies to kids. You are allowed to undercut the market. So if you look in the Gemara asks, Maita Mayu de Rabbanan. What is the rationale of the Rabbanan? By the way, just as an aside, we'll see this in the later Achronim. It's really interesting that the Gemara asks what's the rationale of the Rabbanan, right? Because you might have thought that the Gemara would have asked, what is the rationale of Rabbi Yehuda? But the Gemara does not ask that question. The Gemara asks, what is the rationale of the Rabbanan? And so the Gemara answers, the Amar Lei Ana Mafligina Amguze Vat Polig Shiski. The Rabbanan say, listen, I'm going to give out candy. So if I'm going to give out Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, so you can give out Kit Kat. I'm going to give out Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. You can give out Peanut Chew. Who eats Peanut Chew anymore? You know, I went to the Yankee game last night. Good game, by the way. And there's this big banner in center field, Goldenberg's Peanut Chew. A huge banner. Who eats Peanut Chew anymore? I couldn't believe what I was looking at even. Ridiculous. But in any event, right, the big banner there, right in center field. Okay, whatever it is. Right, so I'm going to give out one candy. You give out another candy. You know, I'm going to give out candy. People don't like to give kids candy anymore today. Oh, no, that's not good. Now everybody's very healthy these days. And so I'm going to give out candy. So you go for a different market. You give out raisins, nature's candy, right? Very, very good. Right? So that's what the Rabbanan say. The Rabbanan say, it's not a problem. I'll give out one thing, I'll give out something else. So, okay, it's all fine. Everybody can do their own business. Now, this one is our real, the one that we really want to focus in on. V'lo yivcho says hashar, v'chachamim om zachor latov. Rabbi Yehuda says, you're not allowed to undercut the market. And the chum say, no, it's good. It's good to undercut the market. Very, very nice. Meritorious for you to undercut the market. So my time at the Rabbanan, the Gemara asks, what's the rationale of the Rabbanan? That you are allowed to undercut the market, and that it is meritorious to undercut the market. So the Gemara answers, Misham dekum meravich letaroi. If you look in Rashi, Rashi translates, first, lo yivchos es hashar. You can't undercut the market, limkor bazol, to sell too cheap. You're not allowed to sell goods too cheap. How come you're not allowed to sell goods too cheap? Look what Rashi says. Mimnei shemar gilovo etzlo, because if you're selling goods cheaper than everybody else, then everybody's going to come buy from you. And why is that bad if everybody comes to buy from you? Because mikapeach mizonos chavero. And then you're taking away mizonos, livelihood, from everybody else. Because everyone's going to come buy from me. I have the cheapest goods. And all of the other vendors are going to lose their business. And the Gemara answers, the Chachamim say, Zachor Latov, that it is meritorious. Why is it meritorious? Shemitoch kach otzrei peiros mochrin bazol. Amazing. Rashi says, you know why it's good if you undercut the market? Because you know what's going to happen then? The market will adjust. Mitoch kach otzrei peiros mochrin bazol. If I undercut the market, then everybody else is going to have to lower their prices. And if everybody else lowers their prices, then what happens? The consumer wins. Everybody lowers their prices. The consumer wins because everybody can get cheap goods. So Chachamim said, Zachor Latov. So if you can come in and undercut the marketplace, so then meritorious for you. Why is it meritorious for you? Because you help everybody else. Now, of course, you don't help everybody else. Who don't you help? The other vendors, right? And that's why the Gemara asked in the first place, or that's why Rabbi Yehuda, I should say, maintained that you're not allowed to undercut the market. Now, in America, I don't do much business, and so I don't really know what the law is. I know that on imported goods, there are strict laws about undercutting the marketplace. They call that anti-dumping. And if you import goods from different countries, you have to pay a tariff if the government believes that your goods will be priced too cheap. I know that that's true on imported goods. I don't know about goods that are made in America. Does anybody know? I didn't look it up. I don't know. Does anybody know? If you produce goods in the States, are there any restrictions on how low you can price those goods? Well, the government certainly controls some prices, right? The government props up the price of certain food staples to keep the farmers in business, right? As much as we like to pretend we have an absolutely free market, it's not the truth. But what is the law? I don't know.
I can't control pricing.
So if I have goods, let's say I manufacture some goods, whatever it is that I make, if I make chairs, so I can price them at whatever I want. Yeah, okay, amazing, good. So that's the law in this country, and that appears to be the opinion of the Rabbanon, which is contrary to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So far, so good. Everybody here with me? So how do we paskin? So if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, the halacha is pretty simple. At least in the beginning, the halacha appears to be pretty simple. The Mechaber paskins in Shulchan Aruch Chosh Mishpat Simin Reish Chav Ches Siv Yud Ches. The Mechaber writes, Mutar Lachenvani Lachalik Kloyos Vegozin Latinokos Kidei Lahargilam Sheyitnu Mimenu. First halacha. Right, the first case in the Mishnah. You're allowed to hand out candy. It's okay. It's fine. Hand out whatever candy you want. V'chein, similarly, the Mechaber writes, Yochol Limkor Bazol Yoseh Me'ashar. You're allowed to undercut the market. You are allowed to sell your goods cheaper than everybody else is selling them. Kidei Sheyiknu Mimenu, so that other people will come and buy goods from you. V'ein B'nei Ashuk Yecholim La'akev Olav, and the other vendors are not allowed to prevent you, to stop you from undercutting the market. They are not allowed to force you to prop up your price. Similarly, if you look in the Ramah is not in Simin Reish Chav Ches, the Ramah is in Simin Kuf Nun Vav, which is earlier in Choshen Mishpat. The Ramah writes a slightly different scenario. Shnei b'nei Adam hadarim b'yachad, if you have two guys who live in the same place, v'ha'echad rotza lohozil b'havas haribis lo'ovei kochavim, and they both lend money to earn a living. Now, if you lend money to Jews, you won't earn much of a living, because the Torah says you're not allowed to charge interest if you lend money to Jews. But if you lend money to non-Jews, then you are allowed to charge interest. So there's two guys that live in the same place, and they both lend money to non-Jews. And so what's the interest rate today?
Zero.
No, it's not zero. It's not zero. Whatever it is, let's make something up. Let's say the interest rate is 4.5%. I have no idea what it is today, right? I could have checked, but I didn't. Let's say the interest rate is 4.5%, and you decide, instead of charging 4.5% interest, you're going to charge 4% interest. You're going to charge 3.75% interest. So the Ramah says, that's okay. You are allowed to undercut the market. That's fine. The Ramah says, "Ein chaver yachol limchos bo." The other lenders are not allowed to prevent me from undercutting the market, from charging less interest. And then the Ramah writes, interesting phrase, "V'hu hadin bechol kayotze bazeh." And the same is true with any similar type of scenario. So halacha appears to be very simple, that you are allowed to undercut the marketplace, that if goods sell for a certain price in a certain locale, you are allowed to come in and you're allowed to price your goods cheaper so that everybody else will come buy from you. Not only does it appear that it is allowed, but the Mishnah says, Zachor Latov, that you will be remembered for good if you do that. It's meritorious to do that, because presumably then the market adjusts, everybody buys goods at a cheaper price, and all of the consumers win. The problem is, the sugya gets slightly more complicated when you start looking at some of the tshuvas. So for example, we just learned the Ramah. What did the Ramah say? The Ramah said you can charge a lesser interest rate, it's all good, and it's all fine. There was a famous fight. Rabbi Prasansky said a series of shiurim about like famous Jewish arguments, I think. You know, I don't think he covered this one. I'm not sure. I don't think he covered this one. But it's probably because it wasn't really all a Jewish fight. There was only one side was Jewish, the other side was not. Okay, fine, whatever. It doesn't make a difference. Right, there was a famous fight in the 1500s over the Rambams of the Maharam of Padua. Have you ever heard of the Maharam of Padua or of the Maharam of Padua's Rambams? Yeah? Some of you are nodding your heads. Amazing. So, what, did we just, somebody just do this recently, this tshuva? No. Okay, good. So if you look in the tshuva of the Ramah, this question came to the Ramah about the Maharam of Padua's Rambams. It came to the Ramah, the same man, the man himself. It came to the Ramah. So look what the Ramah writes. First he writes about the Maharam of Padua. Hine, hu ish ba'aretz lo'ez asher noda shemo b'mer chakim. There is a well-known person right? Living in Italy. Dola dola mayim amukim, neimav mitukim, gozeru mekayim, yivarcheyu shochein shechakim. Everybody, his waters are sweet, and he has dug deep. It's poetic. He's saying that Marama Padua was a great guy. God should bless him. He's a big tree. His fruit is delicious, and he's a good guy. Who Harav Hagom Moreno Rav Meir Mi Padua? Marama Padua or Meir of Padua? Okay. Vihine and behold. I don't know how to pronounce the Italian names. Yantilomer? I don't know. Okay, so you have to understand. In the 1500s, the Jews didn't own printing presses. There was no art scroll in the 1500s. So if you wanted to print Svarim in the 1500s, you had to partner with a non-Jew who owned the printing press, who would allow you to come in and use his printing. So the Maharam of Padua, right, partnered up with this fellow, this Yanti Lomar, right, one of the printers. V'hiskimu yachdav lahadpis achibur agadol Mishnah Torah, asher chibur harav kolol amiti Rabbeinu Moshe ben Harav muvak adayin Rabbeinu Maimon. And they agreed to print the Yad HaChazaka of the Rambam. V'kasher choshav kein hechilu lasos bezus Hashem ad shaleis ata nigmar adava. And they worked hard on making the printing of the Rambam. You had to set the type. It wasn't so simple to print. You didn't just push print and the Rambam came out. You could do that today. That's how I made this sheet. I pushed print and this came out. It didn't used to be that way. You used to have to set the type. It was an ordeal. And so the Maharam of Padua set himself to print the Rambams. V'hegi ito b'sichlo azach ad asher lo nishar b'socha bar teven v'silech ha'mesila ad lo nishar bo even v'nei kom... Oh, stop right there. Right? And he set everything all so that the Rambams were all set and prepared. Now, v'hinei kam echad gam kein yantilomar me'ashirei ha'aretz negdo. And now, after the Maharam of Padua's Rambams were all ready to go, a rival publisher in Padua, Venice, I think, actually, a rival publisher, he decided, va'omar, he said, ese gam anochi lebeisi ve'edpis anochi gam oni v'chein osa. He decided that he was going to put out a printing of the Rambam also. And so he got the Maharam of Padua's Rambams, and he printed the Maharam of Padua's Rambams with the Maharam of Padua's notes in the Rambam, and he flooded the market with Rambams. So now that your market was flooded with Rambams, obviously what happened to the price of the Rambams? The price of the Rambams dropped drastically because there was so much Rambam now in the marketplace. And the second printer, he was not interested in partnering with the first printer or with the Maharam of Padua. And in fact, his motivation, right, was to damage the other printer and the Maharam of Padua, is what he wanted to do. Ki yadua, he knew, im lo yimkor agon tzvarav sheyichabiru lav amasam inso, that if they can't sell their Rambams at the price point that they were expecting to sell their Rambams at, so then they will not be able to carry the burden of the expenses of printing the Rambam, and they'll go under. Vehinini ladun, V'hinnei ladun b'dine Yisrael. So now the Ramah says, so now what is the halacha? What is the halacha? Now, the truth is the Ramah knows not everybody here is Jewish. They weren't coming to ask him, what should we do in the market? The Jews came to ask him. The Maharam of Padua was Jewish. The other side was not. B'im hayu shnei anashim Yisrael ma'apito raseinu akdosha. What would the halacha be according to our Torah? So now let's stop for 1 second right here because it's important. So based on all that we've learned so far today, the Maharam of Padua prints a Rambam, somebody else prints a Rambam, and he wants to flood the market with Rambam. So what should the halacha be? Amazing. Great. Everybody can buy cheap Rambams. Who doesn't want to have a set of Rambam? You thought Rambam was very expensive. Oh, now you got lucky. Rambam is on sale. Rambam is very cheap. Everybody can buy Rambams. That's what we should say. Not only should we say it's okay, but we should also say that the second guy is Zachor Latov. He's meritorious, the second guy. Because you thought that if you wanted to get the Maharam of Padua's notes on the Rambam, you were going to have to pay a lot of money to get the Maharam of Padua's notes on the Rambam. And now, you can just get him cheap, the Maharam of Padua's notes on the Rambam. But the Rambam writes, V'nochiach, but I'm going to prove the Rambam says, Shezocha Hagon Hanal Bidino, that the Maharam of Padua is correct. The second guy should not be allowed to sell his Rambams. So why is that true? That appears to run contrary to the halacha that we saw before. It appears to run contrary to the psak of the Ramah. It's the same person. So the Ramah writes, and this week we're going to learn, the Ramah says, V'nifrad mizevni ala arba rashim. There are four principles, the Ramah says, that we can base this ruling on. Tonight we're going to learn one of them. Next week we're going to learn two of them. The fourth one is not relevant for us so much. But tonight we're going to learn one, and the next week we're going to learn two. So the Ramah says, if you al arba you saw those nachim adavrin, you know, and on these four foundational pieces, everything will become clear. Va'omer, and I say the Ramah says, shedin huim agon, shehuim kar svarav rishona. The halacha is that the Maharam of Padua should be allowed to sell all of his Rambams out. Then, the Rambam says, but I can't do that. I can't pull all of the other guys' Rambams off the market. I can't do that. No one's going to listen to me. I don't have that kind of authority. You see, the Rambam says, if I was in charge, if we were the government, so then we would rule that the Maharam of Padua's Rambams go first, pull all the other Rambams out of the market, hold them back in some silo somewhere or some storage so that the Maharam of Padua can sell his Rambams at the correct price that he wanted to charge. And then when the Maharam of Padua's Rambams are all sold out, so we can bring out the other guy's Rambams. But we can't do that, the Rambam says. No one's going to listen to me. I can't do that. Mikol makom nonetheless. Lo naniach es shalonu velo mar shekol Yisrael u'misha b'shem Yisrael yichonah lo yikna shum sefer mayim lichadoshim. The Rambam says, you know what I can do? I'm the Rambam. So I'm going to say, nobody buy the new Rambams. Anybody who's interested in the psak of the Ramah, which is most probably everybody who was going to be buying Rambams, most probably. So I'm telling you, don't buy the new Rambams. Only buy the Maharam of Padua's Rambams. So if I can't control the market by the law, I can control the market by the consumer. The consumer is a very powerful force in the marketplace. And if I can get the consumers to only buy the Maharam of Padua's Rambams, so then the Maharam of Padua can charge the higher price for his Rambams, because everybody's going to go to get it from him anyway. Rak me'osan ayotza mitachas yadagon anal, o boy kocho, behu me'arba ta'amim, and the Ramah says, and there are four reasons why this is true. So you ready? We're going to learn the first one tonight. Here we go. Number one. Hayesod ha'poshut ha'rishom. The first principle is, hu beperek lo yachpo. Omar Rav Huna said, this Gemara, ooh, I remember this Gemara well. I was a little kid. Does anybody remember when Jerusalem Pizza was the only pizza shop in town? Not the only one, right? Well, exactly right. Exactly right, Ali. You remember that? I was a little kid, but I remember. I remember probably only a minutia of the brouhaha that took place in this town when somebody wanted to open up a second pizza shop. But I remember as a little kid the brouhaha that took place. And so it must have been that it was a brouhaha. Because I don't know that I was the most perceptive child, but I remember it. So it must have been that people were talking about it. Right? And Albi said the exact right terminology. Right? Albi said the discussion is called Hasagas Gvul. So Rav Huna teaches as follows. This is where Rav Huna says, Hai bar mevua de ukim recha. So let's say one guy owns a business. Let's say he has a mill. I have a mill. And you want to come into town and you want to open up a competing mill. Right across the street from my mill. Let's just say, right next door to my mill. Who cares? Wherever you want to set up your competing mill. So Rav Huna says, I can force you not to do that. If I have the business here in this town, I can say to you, I'm sorry, sir, but this is my town, this is my street, this is my mill territory, and you have to take your mill somewhere else, you cannot open up shop here. That's what Rav Huna says. Umashrim to komar v'uki gabei, sh'asadav rezebi idiyaso, v'afilu achi yoko laki v'alav. And the Rav Huna says, okay, it sounds like everybody knew that this was going on, and still, right, the first vendor can force the second vendor out of town. That's what Rav Huna teaches in the Gemara. Im kein, the Rav Huna says, if that is true, harei lefaneinu, so behold, you see, shemidininu, ein lo la'antlim or sheni litfos zeklal. The second guy should never have printed Rambam. We already have a Rambam vendor here. The Maram of Padua already has Rambams. The second guy should never have printed the Rambams. And therefore, the Maram of Padua is allowed to say, you can't sell your Rambams here. You're not allowed to sell your Rambams here. But then the Rambam says, V'af agav shrev afasi v'harosh pasku delokir Rav Huna. Dekom lei ki chudoi. But the halacha is not like Rav Huna. That's what Rav Huna said. Rav Huna said that. But the halacha is not like Rav Huna. The Rif paskins against Rav Huna. The Rush paskins against Rav Huna. The halacha is that I can open a pizza shop across the street from your pizza shop. You do pizza business in your shop. And I do pizza business in my shop. I'm allowed to open pizza right across the street. That's okay. The halacha is not like Rav Huna. Mikom makom, the Rama says, nonetheless, Omer ani sheyesh lehisyashev badavar. The Rama says, but that's not the whole story. Why? Sheharei b'Mordechai perek lo yachbar maisi b'shem avi asaf, because the Mordechai writes on this Gemara, v'zeh l'shono, this is the language of the Mordechai. Mavui hasasam mishloshot stadim. Imagine you have a marketplace, and the marketplace is built in a strange way. The marketplace is built with three sides. So the market goes down, across, and then back up. Everybody sees it? Rak b'tzad echad hu pasuach lichnos bo, and there's only one way in and out of the market. The fourth side, which is open, is the only way in and out of the marketplace. V'dar Reuven eitzel sofo asosim. And Reuven has a shop. What does he sell? I don't know. He sells sneakers. And he sells sneakers, but his shop is all the way in the back of the marketplace. And Shimon wants to open a sneaker store all the way in the front of the marketplace. So the Mordechai says, even though the halacha is not like Rav Huna, the halacha is not like Rav Huna, which means if I have a sneaker shop and you want to open a sneaker shop, you're allowed to open a sneaker shop. But the Mordechai said, but if the market is constructed in a way where my shop is all the way in the back, and now you're going to build a shop all the way in the front, where it becomes impossible. You will never reach my sneaker shop in the back without going past your sneaker shop in the front. So then the halacha is like Rav Huna. And I am allowed to prevent you from opening a sneaker shop in the front of the market. Now, if you want to come open a sneaker shop in the back of the market, next door to mine, that's okay. But if you want to open up a sneaker shop in front of the market, the Mordechai says that's not allowed. Now, what is the difference? But then, everybody understand? You're opening the same store in the same market. So why would it be that in the back of the market, next to my shop, it's okay, and in the front of the market, it's not okay? So the Rama writes in the underlined section, skip a line, Ella, al korchach tzrikin on lechalik. The Rama says we must develop a distinction. And what is the distinction? Here we go. Dibidavar dibori hezeka. Oh, that's the key terminology of the Rama. In a scenario where bori hezeka means damage is a certainty. In a scenario where opening the second shop will with certainty damage the first shop, for example, in the case of the strange marketplace, so there's only one place, one way to go in. And so for sure, the guy in back business is going to be severely damaged. Everybody would agree that the halacha is like Rav Huna, and you're not allowed to open up the second seeker shop. And therefore, in our scenario, nami bari hezekahu. This is amazing. In our scenario, now remember, what's the Rambam talking about? The Maram of Padua's Rambams. In the scenario of the Maram of Padua's Rambams, it is for sure that by selling the second set of Rambams, it will damage the Maram of Padua. Why does the Rambam know that? How do we know that that's for sure? The Rambam writes something really interesting. This is important. Kiant lilo mar sheni nosan lahachriz shekol sefer yo. Because the second publisher put his merchandise on sale for a for a percentage less than the Maharam's Rambams. So you know the Maharam, you know what he did? He lowered his price. He adjusted. So you know what the other guy did? He lowered his price again. And every time the Maharam came down, the other guy brought his price even lower. So the Rambam says, you see, umirazos v'lo yaboy elav liknos mimenu v'yachol hu lahosil kihumi ashirei haaretz. Amazing. And the second publisher, the Rambam says, is one of the richest guys in the town. So he knows, the second publisher, that he can take the price all the way down. He doesn't care. It'll sit there. You know why he doesn't care? Because the other guy is going to run out of money first. I think in America we call this predatory pricing. I believe that's the terminology. I think that's what it's called. If I undercut the market, not to cause competition, no. I undercut the market to take a loss. I don't care. I don't care. How come I don't care? Because I have more money. So I know that I'll take a loss for X amount of time. The result will be that I'll put everybody else out of business, and then I'll be the only guy left, and I can raise the price back up. So the Rambam says, in a scenario and in circumstances where you were undercutting the market with the intent of driving everybody else out of business, then that is not allowed. So in Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam rules, like the Chachamim, that you are allowed to undercut the market. Not only are you allowed to undercut the market, but it's meritorious to undercut the market. But in the Tshuvos, the Rambam writes a tremendous caveat that the Rambam does not write in the Shulchan Aruch. And that is, but not too much. But not too much. How come not too much? Because if my motivation is to drive everybody else out of business, then that is not allowed, and that is why the Rambam paskin, at least that is one of four reasons why the Rambam paskin, in the case of the Maharam of Padua's Rambams, that everybody should buy Rambams from the Maharam of Padua. Everybody here with me so far? Yeah, Henry. It's a good question. I don't know enough. I don't know enough. I'm sure it's different for different things. I don't know enough. It's a good question. I'm not sure. We have to look at each of the different halachas and go backwards. I'm not positive. I'm not positive. Yeah, Jackie. Welcome. It's good to have you. Yeah. 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 That's what he's asking. No, until the Maharam sells out.
Yeah, I'm saying
that.
Right.
Yeah.
So then if the Maharam Padua comes out with a second edition,
No, it does not. That is correct. Just that first run. Maharam Padua is allowed to sell out his Rambams. And the truth is, I'm saying, let's imagine a different scenario. The Maharam of Padua sells most of his Rambams, and there's only a few left on the market. So what happens then? The price goes up. There's only a few left. I would even imagine in that scenario that the Rambam would then say, okay, good. So the Maharam of Padua was not hurt. His business was not hurt. In fact, his price now is very high, so we should let the other guy sell his Rambams now.
So
that should be allowed.
Because it's like the second guy with the Mazik to the person.
That's right.
His property.
It appears that what the Rambam is saying is that in order to create competition, not only is that allowed, but that's meritorious. Because then the consumer gains and everybody can get more goods at lower prices. But to drive a competitor out of business, right, what they call predatory pricing in English, that the Rambam says is not allowed. That the Rambam says is not allowed. I think it all has to do with the cost of the goods, right, and the margins. So if I'm cutting into your profit margin, that's okay, and that's allowed, and it's even meritorious.
To damage him, right?
That's what the Rambam says. Exactly. That is the psak of the Rambam. That is the psak of the Rambam. Good. Let's go to the Chulin Panim Meiros. Chulin Panim Meiros is the late 16, early 1700s. Yes. Choshen Mishpat is good, right? Yeah. It's not only intention. Yes, you're right. Yes, that's the way the Rambam says it. Right, but I think it's also a factor of the money. What I mean by that is let's say I want to hurt your business, right? So I undercut the market. But the truth is, you have more money than me. That's the truth. So I'm not going to be able to drive you out of business. All I'm going to be able to do is cut your margin slightly because you're going to match me, and you can match me. You can. You match my price, and maybe even you'll still make profit. but I wanna hurt you. So that's why I think in that scenario, even the Rama might say it is okay. The Rama might say it is okay, even though my intent is bad. Do you understand what I'm saying? I think it's a combination of the two. I think intent is an important part of it, but I think that the money is also important because the Rama uses that language. He also uses the language of Bari Hezeka, which means that I'm certainly going to cause you damage and harm. Yeah.
You could have a scenario where people selling the same commodity, do the same. I already have the inventory. My intention is not to damage you at all. I have an urgent personal need. I need to generate cash.
Right.
The price to sell at a loss. My kavanah is fine.
Right.
Is that okay?
That should be fine. I want to unload this. I need to get rid of it.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to drive you out of business now. If the result will be, let's say I have so much inventory, right, and I need to liquidate so much money, that the result is going to be that I'm going to drive everybody out of business. That's going to be the result. So then maybe it'd be problematic. But I would imagine that if I really just want to liquidate and get rid of everything right now, then I would imagine I'm not going to drive everybody out. I might hurt everybody's business for a little period of time, but then I'm going to be out of it. I'm going to be out of it. So everybody else is going to be able to come back. So that might not be the same thing. They'd buy it from me. That could be. I don't know.
It also
depends on the merchandise. You're right. That's true. You're right, Uncle. You're right.
I'm stuck on the notion that stock is geared towards something that someone created with his own hands. He printed this.
Yeah.
And someone's coming to destroy his creation. It's not a third-party commodity.
But let's
I'll give you an example.
Yeah. But let's switch the product. Right. Let's say that you grew eggplants. I have eggplants growing in my garden right now. Hope my neighbor is going to enjoy them while I'm here. But right, let's say you grow eggplants. So it'd be the same halacha. If you have more eggplants than I do, right, which you might. I don't know if you grow eggplant or not, but you might. So let's say you have more eggplant than I do. So I come to the market with my eggplant. You look across and you say, Feigenbaum has eggplant. It's ridiculous. Feigenbaum should not. I don't like Feigenbaum. I don't want to sell eggplant. And you cross off your sign. Right. Your sign says eggplant. No, what does eggplant cost a pound? I don't know. Right, 99 cents each, whatever it is. You cross off your sign and you write eggplant 33 cents each. Right? So this would be the same halacha. Halacha should be the same. Jackie?
I thought that they, nowadays there are many times that they're living exclusive for a certain number of years.
That could be.
And then after that...
That could be. Everyone could reach, you could reach agreements. But the halacha appears to be as follows. The halacha appears to be that to set your pricing in a predatory fashion to drive everybody else out of business is not allowed. To lower your pricing to create competition, even if it cuts into margins of your competitors, is allowed. Not only is allowed, but it's meritorious. The halacha appears to be. That's what I'm all right.
Oh,
that's very true. In the scenario where the products are not identical, all bets are off. If I'm selling a different product, even slightly different product, better product, a little worse product, pizza. I don't know. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. Maybe I could try to claim I use more cheese in my pizza, and so, or I use less cheese in my pizza, so therefore I can. I don't know. That gets a little complicated. Yeah,
people
Joe.
Taste, and the price
is not so relevant.
Now, maybe more. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh. All right. We have 1/7 of a pizza store in Memphis. 1/7 of a pizza store. It's a bakery. They make pizza once a week. So we have 1/7 of a pizza store. Okay, good. On Wednesday in Memphis, you can get pizza. 1/6, the Shabbos doesn't even count, 1/6 of a pizza store. Okay, very, very good. Now, if we look at the Tshuvas Panim Meiros, the late 16th into the 1700s, and look at this Shaila that he got. Listen to this. Nishalti mimachzike ar nadarish, I don't know what that means, it's some kind of like union, right? Shechziku shnei kfarim besoch tchum echad. They were the authority over two different villages that lived in the same tchum, the same general area. So you had two villages. In the same tchum, you could walk from one to the other. And Teaneck and Englewood, right? So there was Teaneck and Bergenfield, fine, whatever you want. Teaneck and Bergenfield, great, right? Hackensack, New Milford, Teaneck and Bergenfield. Okay, good. Very, very good. Right, now. Kol Echad Misar Echad. But there was different municipalities. Teaneck has a town council. Bergenfield has a town council. There's two towns right next to each other, but different municipalities. Now look at this. V'rotze echad limkor mashke yayin sarav v'sheikhar b'zol yoser mimashe nikva ashar b'medina v'hasheni moche v'yado ba'omro ki ugorim lo hezik. Amazing. The taxes in Teaneck were lower than the taxes in Bergenfield. Let's just say. Not possible? Let's just say. Right? And so the guys, they were selling beer and whiskey. That was the scenario. They were selling beer and whiskey. And the guys in Teaneck were selling cheaper than the guys in Bergenfield. So the guys in Bergenfield wanted the guys in Teaneck to prop up the price. Why did they want the guys in Teaneck to prop up the price? They said to them, listen, you'll prop the price, you'll get more profit, and we'll stay in business. Because if you keep the same profit margins, then your price is going to be cheaper than ours, right? And your price is going to be cheaper than ours. Everybody's going to go buy in Teaneck. No one's going to buy from us, and we're going to go out of business. Yeah?
That was exactly Amazon when they went into business.
Is that right?
They sold online.
They sold online. That's right. Oh, so that was exactly right. Oh, so look at what he writes. So he go me la sha ye day say mar ge love let so an che kvar shlo lishtos sham va ye day say bolo hefsit because then everybody in my scenario from Bergenfield is going to come to Teaneck and the guy in Bergenfield not going to have any business left. So look, he writes, Damrina Perakazov Daf Sam Khamarat lo yifchos Zashar. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the Gemara, the Mishnah that we learned is Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to undercut the market. The Chachamim Om Zachor Latov. The Chachamim said, no, meritorious. So my time at the Rabbanon, the Gemara asks, what's the rationale of the Rabbanon? The Gemara says, because Uperish Rashi, the Otsri Perish Yerusha, who's Luvayim Krubazol, that the market will adjust. The Gemara says, the market will adjust, everybody will be able to buy cheaper goods. Hello. Mideparach, my time of the Rabbanon. The Gemara asked, what's the rationale of the Rabbanon? He says, I don't understand. What do you mean? Pashut b'shvil shemahana alokchem yisra v'lachach nakti lashon baracha zachor latov. Ela, al korachach. Here we go. Delo mishkachinam betovas alokchem came to ikab seda l'mochrin. That at first, the Gemara was concerned that maybe we should be more concerned about the loss to the vendors than we are about the benefit to the buyers. Ukfar yotza hashar. And in our scenario, the government is setting prices. In their towns, the government set prices. Vuhu chok hamedina. Lahasno sala sha'arim. And the law is that the people in one municipality are not allowed to charge a certain price. They need to charge a certain price. Vahava kedina de machusa. And it's the law. Ulakach. And that's why the Gemara has to ask, well, wait a second, why is it that you're allowed to do harm to the other vendors in order to undercut the market? Amazing. And that's why he says, the Gemara says, you know what the net result is going to be? The market will adjust. Everybody will lower their prices. You'll be able to get cheaper goods everywhere. You know what's going to happen, though, in this scenario? The market will not adjust. How come the market will not adjust? Because the government will not allow the market to adjust. The government tells the guys in the other municipality that they're not allowed to sell their prices below a certain point. So if the market will not adjust, then the result will be all those guys will go out of business and everybody will come by me. That's not what the Gemara said, Panamira says. What did the Gemara say? The Gemara said that I'm allowed to undercut the market. How come? Because if I undercut the market will adjust and everybody will get cheap goods. That's not going to happen here. What's going to happen here is everybody's going to go out of business and I'm going to be the only guy left. How come? Because the government will not allow the market to adjust. And there upon Meiros ruled that in a scenario where the government will not allow the market to adjust, where the market cannot adjust, for whatever reason have you, then the halacha would be different. Not like we saw in the Gemara. And you are not allowed to undercut the marketplace in a scenario where the market cannot adjust. The Gemara only says you're allowed to undercut the marketplace because the market will adjust and everywhere will be able to get cheap goods. That's not going to happen here because the government will not allow it. And therefore, Panim Eros writes that in this scenario, the guys in my case, the guys in Bergenfield are allowed to dictate prices to the guys in Teaneck. Now, how far do you take this? I'm saying, you know, people can travel today very, very far. You know, you could order goods, you know, from very, very far away, right? Like we were talking about with Amazon, right? So I'm not sure how far the Panim Meiris would extend it. He's talking about within one tchum, where I can walk from one to the other. What happens if we start going out, you know, 24,000 tchums? You know, so would we have to set worldwide pricing for goods to meet the highest taxes that you find? According to Panim Meiris, I'm not sure how far he would extend it. But his argumentation is that the Gemara's rationale is that the market will adjust. If the market cannot adjust, then you cannot undercut the market to that extent. This is similar to the Ramah's argument, but it's not exactly the same thing. Everybody sees this is not exactly the same thing. The Ramah was talking about, you know, predatory pricing and driving other people out of business, and the Panim Meiris is talking about artificially propping up prices for whatever reason. What?
The same result.
The result is the same. The result is the same, but the way of getting there is not the same. You get there different. You get there from different places. Good. Now this chiddush, the reason why it's important that it's not the same, is that this chiddush of the Panim Meiros was debated by the Tzantzarev. The Tzantzarev a little bit after the Panim Meiros, he knew the Panim Meiros, and he got a very similar question. Look at the Divrei Chaim, right? The Tzantz Kleisenberger Rebbe, right? So he had the following shayla. Sheela, the question is, Im mutar la'echor hayoshe bakfar tachasar borandi, if somebody is living in a village underneath the municipality of this fellow, virotza livchos hashar miyayin sarf. I don't know why they all sold whiskey. I don't know. The bootleggers over there, you know, no, I'm just kidding. We'll get to bootleggers in a second. These guys were not bootleggers. These guys were legitimate businessmen, right? But they all sold whiskey. I don't know, the Panim Meiros question is about whiskey, and the Tzantzarev's question is about whiskey. I don't know. What? They were Southerners, yeah. So, no, I don't know. So, I guess so. Right? Okay, good. Right? So you were living out in this village. And there was other guys living in the city. Since you were living in the village, you paid less taxes than the guys who were living in the city. I don't know if it's like that here. I don't know what it's like here. I know in Memphis, so I live in Memphis, and I live in the city. Memphis is part of Shelby County. So there's Memphis, which is the city, and there's Shelby County, which is the broader county. So I pay double tax. That's how it is by us. I pay city tax and I pay county tax. Is it like that here also? Does Bergen County collect different taxes than, no? Okay, everyone, you just pay one tax. What? New York City is like that? You have to pay New York State and New York City? Okay, so Memphis is like that too. I pay city taxes and I pay county taxes. I pay both. What?
I pay county taxes.
Here. Do you also pay a city tax?
No,
I pay two property taxes. Yeah, I pay two property taxes, and they're not the same percentage. They're not the same thing. I pay city tax and I pay county tax. Okay, that's how they get you in Memphis. They get you everywhere. They get you a different way. They don't get you like that. They get you some other way. You pay income tax here to the state? Good, they get you like that. I don't pay income tax to the state. Okay, fine. They get you somehow or another. They get you. Okay, fine. It doesn't matter. Right? So, in this scenario, the Tzantz Kleisenberger Rebbe got the same shayla. The guys who were living in the city, they had to pay a higher tax. The guys who were out in the village, the taxes were lower. So there was a guy selling whiskey, some kind of tavern out in the village, and the guys in the city got upset because the guys from the city were going out to the village to get their whiskey. The guy was charging lower prices because he had lower taxes. So it sounds Tzantz Kleisenberger Rebbe, he quotes the Panim Meiros. He quotes it. If you skip to the next paragraph, you say, Vihine be'emes be'panim Meiros chelek aleph, you see it? Rutzel l'datek kein. So in the Panim Meiros, he thought that in that kind of scenario, that in his scenario, the government was dictating prices. And therefore he ruled that you're not allowed to undercut the marketplace because the market cannot adjust. Look well there what he says. Ach be'emes. But the Tzantz Kleisenberger Rebbe says, but the truth is that Amayim B'Divrei Rashi Zal, if you look in the Gemara that we learned, and the Rashi over there, Yira Lehedja Lehefech, you'll see that the Gemara says the opposite. Look what he writes. Dirashi zal perish my time of the Rabbanon. The Gemara asked, what is the rationale of the Rabbanon? Now, what did the rabbi say? The rabbi said, you can undercut the marketplace and zachor latov, it's meritorious. So the Gemara asked, what's the rationale of the Rabbanon? Dilokat nishna de zachor latov. And Rashi asks, and Rashi says, sorry, when the Gemara asks, what is the rationale of the Rabbanon? Rashi says, what is the rationale of the Rabbanon? That the act of undercutting the market is meritorious. You see, what did Rashi explain? The rabbi said two things, that Sanz Klesenberg Rebbe says. The rabbi said two things. One, they said, you can undercut the market. Two, they said, it's meritorious. The Gemara asks, what's the rationale of the Rabbanon? The Gemara answered, the market will adjust and everybody gets cheap goods. Now, when the Gemara said, what is the rationale of the Rabbanon? What was it talking about? The first thing the rabbi said, that you can undercut the market? Or the second thing the rabbi said, that it's meritorious? So Rashi says, the Gemara is talking about the second thing that the rabbi said. So why is it considered to be meritorious to undercut the market? Because the market will adjust and everybody everywhere will get cheap goods. So you know why it's meritorious? It's meritorious because you help everybody everywhere. That's why it's meritorious. But is it allowed? It's always allowed. Even if the market will not adjust. You see, how did the Panim Me'iros learn the Gemara? The Panim Me'iros learned the Gemara when the Gemara asked, what's the rationale of the Rabbanon? Why are the rabbis allow you to undercut the market? The Gemara says, because the market will adjust. So the Panim Me'iros said, well, if the market will not adjust, then you're not allowed to undercut the market. And it sounds because the Gemara says, no, that's not what the Gemara means. The Gemara was not asking, why are you allowed to undercut the market? You're allowed to undercut the market. Why are you allowed to undercut the market? Because you can set your prices, whatever you want to set your prices at. Leave me alone. Right? You have prices, you have goods, you sell whatever you want. Sell them at. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? It depends. If you're going to undercut the market and the market will adjust and everybody everywhere is now going to be able to get cheap goods, then it's a good thing. Zachor Latov, that's what the rabbis say. But if it's not going to adjust, the market will not adjust, the net result will be that I'm going to be the only one selling at this price and nobody else is going to be able to adjust with me, so that's not meritorious, but it is allowed. That's what Sanz Klesenberger Rebbe argues. But it is allowed. And it's a good deal from Rashi. That's what Divrei Chaim says. It says the machlokes between the Panim Me'iros and the Tzanz Klesenberger Rebbe. What happens if the government, for whatever reasons, it doesn't only have to be the government, there could be other factors also, right? But if there's taxes involved and they're higher in one locale than another, so the Shuvas Panim Me'iros, he said we have to take that into account, and if the market cannot adjust, then you cannot undercut the market. And the Divrei Chaim, he argues, oh, no, you can undercut the market. In that scenario, it might not be meritorious, but it certainly is allowed. It's machlokes achronim. What would be the situation in that kind of circumstance? Now, Divrei Chaim had another shayla, also from people with whiskey. It's the last shayla I'll do with you tonight. Look at the shayla. This one is slightly different. Are you ready? Sha'ela. It's the next tshuva. That one that we just learned is Choshen Mishpat Aleph Yud Ches. The next one, Choshen Mishpat Aleph Yud Ches. It's the next page in the Sefer. Right? So, Sha'ela. Be'ir echad she'arandi shayach lahasar v'kamu eza anoshim u'porku ma'eleim olo arandi u'mozgim mashke b'ha'alama b'zol harbe. Ooh. This is different altogether. This is bootleggers, right? There was a certain amount of taxes, whatever it is, that you have to pay in order to sell whiskey. You have to get a license and, you know, whatever the government rules were in that time. And there were some guys who decided they didn't want to pay the tax. They didn't want to pay the tax. So they were making their own whiskey. They weren't paying any of the government fees. They didn't set up, they weren't paying any of the taxes or any of the fees. And so obviously, they were selling their whiskey for a lot cheaper than everybody else. Obviously. Because...
Why didn't
he call it Gizela? Well, he does. We'll get there in a second. Right? It gets worse though, Henry. The government got very angry. The government back then was not the same as the government today. And so when they found out that these guys were bootlegging and they weren't paying the taxes and the fees, so they were going to just kick all the Jews out of that area, just, you know, get out of here. So people looking at me funny, they did this in Tennessee. I'm a Memphian. They did this in Tennessee in the Civil War. They thought the Jews were war profiteering. We were making a profit, on the Civil War, and the Jews were expelled from Tennessee. It's a good history nugget right there, right? The Jews were expelled from Tennessee during the Civil War. Ulysses S. Grant, he kicked us out. That's where I live. Okay, very good, right? So yesh limchos biyara shakras mi'ira me'ilim. So can we shut these guys out of business? Can we force them to stop producing their their whiskey. So first he quotes the Ramah. If you look in the next paragraph, Ach mi yavo acharei hamelech haramah asher kasa b'tshuva, the one that we learned, b'feirush d'limchor b'zol harbe kuli amah modim daser. The Ramah said, what did the Ramah say? That if you undercut the market so much that you drive everybody else out of business, then that's not allowed. So then he says, okay, he has questions about this Ramah, but in the end, that's what the Ramah says. Look down the next paragraph, and Henry, this is your point. Shanis, second, Nira to Asr Mitam Gizela. This is thievery. This is a different sugya altogether. This is not what we've been talking about the whole night. This is something else entirely. This is thievery. And third, he says, if you look down, Benidon Didan Shasai Rotel Agarish Meos Nefashos, where the government is going to take action against all of the Jews there, so he rules for sure we have to shut them out of business, for sure. So even though the Franz Kloisenberger Rebbe himself, in the scenario where the government was charging different taxes, so he thought in that scenario I could charge whatever I want. But he does not allow you to circumvent the government entirely to avoid the fees and taxes. And in a similar kind of shiloh like that, he thought that we would have to force those guys out of business. Yeah?
That's not the government, but what about ticket scalpers?
Is that legal?
Some places, yes. Some places, no. Did you buy tickets?
So let's say it is legal. Let's say it is. So now what's the shiloh?
So I'm undercutting the stadium where the team is selling at full price.
Right.
And I'm coming in, I'm undercutting the market. There's no law against it.
Yeah. So it should go like this. Let's start with the Ramah. If I'm undercutting the market so much that it's going to drive everybody else out of business, that's not the case here. I'm not going to put the stadium out of business by scalping. It's not going to happen. So according to the Ramah, it should be allowed. Now let's move to the Tzanz HaRov, right? Tzanz Kloisenberger Rebbe. I have tickets. I can sell what I want. This may not be meritorious. It's not going to affect the market, right? The market will not adjust. If the market will not adjust, So maybe according to the Panim Meiros, it might not be allowed. Because the Panim Meiros says it's only okay to undercut the market when the market's going to adjust. If I scalp tickets, the market's not going to adjust. So he might say it's not allowed. But Sanz Kloisenberger Rebbe, the Derech Chaim, would say that it is allowed. I don't care if the market's going to adjust. It might not be meritorious. It should be allowed. It appears to me, I never thought about this before, it appears to me that if it's legal, if it's against the law, so then we're back to the bootleggers. It's not allowed. But if it's legal, it should be allowed.
A new market.
The stadium is not going to drop its prices. But if you want tickets last minute, whatever it is, it might open up. Maybe. That might be fair. Assuming that it's legal. Because if it's not legal, then we're back to the bootleggers at the end. Yeah, Henry.
The problem with the tickets really belong to the original owner. If you're saying it's legal, then...
So we have to make sure it's legal. Assuming that it's legal. No. Assuming that it's allowed.
It's legal, the people selling the tickets are either ticket owners or somebody named broker to sell tickets. Sorry.
Right. So assuming that it's legal, so that it would appear to me that that is... It would appear to me that that is okay. Okay, so this is the sugya about setting prices, and let's quickly summarize. Right, I think that the halacha is that it not only is allowed to undercut the market, but that it is meritorious to undercut the market in order to create competition, in order to drive other people out of business. Right, so then it would not be allowed. And if I undercut the market, but the market will not adjust, right? I'm not driving people into business, but the market will not adjust. So then it's not meritorious for sure, and it's a machlokas between the Divrei Chaim and the Panim Meiros if that would be allowed. Next week we're going to look at the other side of the coin. And as this week we spoke about sale prices from the perspective of the vendor. Next week we're going to talk about from the perspective of the buyer. What I really want to talk about next week is, do you have an obligation? Because remember, we start with the tshuva of the Ramah and the Maram of Pano. So the second question that the Ramah asks in that tshuva is, do you have an obligation to buy Jewish? That's the second question the Ramah asks. The Maram of Pano was Jewish, and the other guy who printed the Rambams was not. So do you have an obligation to buy Jewish? So that's what we're going to look at next week, whether such an obligation exists. We'll look at the second... What? What was that?
Yom HaShabbos.
We'll talk about that too. It's all there. What? We'll talk about it all next week. That'll be the sugya we'll talk about next week. Everybody's invited back next Wednesday night. Same bat time, same bat channel. Everybody have a great night. Thank you for coming. Henry, I just pushed stop.